Yesterday, we were in Jamestown at the Winter Ag and Construction Expo, had a panel entitled Writing the Next Farm Bill. Obviously, that's a couple of years away. So we talked a lot about the current ag economy, where we were in 2020, and where we're headed now as we turn the page to a new administration, new regulatory dynamics, and obviously fixes for the food supply program. Panelists were North Dakota Senator Terry Wanzek, North Dakota Farm Bureau President Darrell Lease, North Dakota Agriculture Commissioner Doug Goring. Regarding government help during 2020, which helped farmers have a positive cash flow year, Darrell Lease, North Dakota Farm Bureau President, says,
"We advocate quite heavily for moving away from government programs. In fact, we got policy from our grassroots policy development process from our members that states to find ways to farm without the programs and move away from the government. The one thing that we watch for in farm bills, and I think will be probably the topics that, you know, I will bring up, is the regulatory side of things. And, you know, along with the programs comes a lot of regulation, and make sure that the regulation isn't so overbearing that, you know, the quote unquote subsidy or program is really just a wash when you come down to the cost of applying the regulations at the same time."
But regarding the billions of dollars of federal aid that have come to farmers from the federal government, obviously Farm Bureau has, as Darrell mentioned, policy that is against farm programs, or at least relying on farm programs to stay financially whole on the farm.
What caused the pain? What, you know, was it decisions made by farmers? No, it wasn't. Was it decisions made by grocery store owners, Main Street small businesses? No, it wasn't. It was government decisions and government restrictions and you know, a lot of media hype that made things collapse in 2020 like they did. And so when you look at it from that aspect, you kind of have to balance the two. Now, the way they rolled out some of this money, and here's the problem that we have with a lot of government programs, is it creates a lot of inequity. Case in point is, you know, the first CFAP is the whole cattle thing was a real mess in that deal, because folks actually that contracted their calves, their spring calves, got paid a higher dollar amount than someone that didn't contract their calves. Same calves, same time born, February, March, April, whatever. But if they contracted their calves, USDA considered that a sale, even though no money had changed hands and it wasn't a guaranteed sale yet. You have a contract with intent to deliver and a contract with intent to receive from the buyer. So that created some inequity, and we heard from it, from our membership, of the inequity that created out in ranch country, because now you put more money in someone's pocket that was doing the same thing out on the farm and ranch, calving cows. There's more, all of a sudden, more money in their pocket because they made a future marketing decision sooner than the other guy did. And so, but was it wrong to try and do something in a situation that was completely a government restriction caused deal? No. And so we look at that a little bit different, although we think that, you know, there was some unnecessary payments in there, like I said, that created some inequity. I don't know that we needed round two. Anyone that was paying attention to the markets starting in August, the grains started to move, and well, all of a sudden, we know what they've done here lately now. So, I mean, there was opportunities starting for markets, which, by the way, we can thank that, you know, China phase one trade deal for a lot of that. But so we really question, you know, when you do payments, if that's going to be the system that's in place, then we go into the mode of what's equitable, what's necessary, and how do you structure that for that equity? And you know, things were done in a rush. You're not going to be perfect in a rush. We don't hold it against the Trump administration or Congress for wanting to do something to help. But through that help, it did create some inequity positions out there, and the beef one was just the easy one to point out because it was, you know, about $70 difference per head. Well, if you got two ranchers that have 300 cows apiece and one has an extra $70 a head, they've got an extreme market advantage when it comes to cash renting new pasture, hayland, making improvements to become more efficient, things like that. So we got to try and figure out, we advocate at that point equity, and we made a lot of phone calls on that to try and figure out if that was the proper way to do it or not. And we may be looking at the same thing here on CPAP too, depending on how it gets rolled out when it comes to the contract feeders that are supposed to be taken care of in CFAP too, and which was really kind of concentrated probably on the pork and the poultry. But we have several small contract feeders, feedlots in North Dakota, but they don't have a constant contract like the hog industry and the chicken industry does. So they're wondering if they're going to be included or if they're going to be in an equitable position to other contract feeders that have a yearly contract. Something to keep our eye on.
North Dakota Farm Bureau President Darrell Lease on market transparency in the livestock industry. But when it comes to grain prices, things are looking pretty good. North Dakota Ag Commissioner Doug Goring commented on my question regarding that.
And you're already seeing some impacts and effects from markets moving. And you know, to a great degree, I got to tell you that probably a lot of farmers in North Dakota and the upper Midwest really aren't going to be able to take advantage of these prices unless you got some options out there and you're working in that realm and in a hedge account. You're probably going to have some opportunities. But to that degree, if you really look at where most crop was probably already sold, it was sold a while back, the majority of it. You might have a few bushels in the bin that you're still working with. The livestock market is seeing some ebbs and flows, and it's trying to really find its feet underneath it and see where we go forward from there. At the state level, these are some things that we have to start mitigating, looking at as we go forward, planning, making our best laid plans, and really trying to use some of those risk management tools to help you the best you can on your own farm and your own operation. We have some things going for us. Chances are, when you look at current cash market versus new crop, there's a pretty big disparagement to some degree, depending on what crop you're looking at. But we're probably going to see that accelerated and move up because we're going to see stock numbers continuing to tighten, and beans are probably going to drive that. The nice thing, and I'll say this, and some people that are in the investment banking may not like it as much, but with the value of the dollar going down, we've now just become competitive in a global market. And that's going to continue to feed our ability to export. We're seeing some disruptions in the Black Sea. They have some drought-like conditions. It's tough when that crop breaks dormancy. And when they start to plant a new crop, they are going to be in a little bit different situation. Probably a little bit like North Dakota is right now when you start to look from Highway 3 in west. It's extremely dry out that way. In fact, they dealt with a lot of drought last year. Southern Brazil has some issues. We may see an average or a little bit below average all across the board when it comes to beans and production this year out of South America. Our Argentina, some of their major crop growing areas, don't have the rain either. We're going to see some stocks get cut there. It's going to continue to prop up prices. That's going to help us as we move forward, but as I was saying right at the onset of this, is you're already seeing the impacts and effects. Fertilizers went from $310 on nitrogen to $390 already, just in 2 weeks, because somebody's afraid they're not going to get their share out of this. We haven't even put the crop in the bin. We haven't even planted it. We haven't even experienced on our side what opportunities really exist, which is, in many respects, after 7 years, we got a lot of healing to do out there. Last year helped. I will tell you that most producers, most in the grain industry, benefited, and it helped put a floor on the farm with CFAP 1, CFAP 2, and then with the most current recent stimulus package that was passed, that's going to be across the board a flat fee, $20 an acre for everything that you planted and did in 2020, which leaves, as Daryl pointed out, in inequity. We have 2.6 million prevent plant acres in North Dakota. A lot of those farmers didn't benefit out of one, two, or three. That creates real challenges on their side. I mean, they really got stuck and hit hard. And they still had an expense of managing and caring for that land. And hopefully they'll have some benefits coming into 2021. When you look at what the state can do, a lot of what Senator Wanzek talked about are some things that we can help in specific areas. Across the board, it still comes down to the federal government putting a one-size-fits-all program in place that is going to create those inequities. Some of the things that Senator Wanzek mentioned, and I think of the one that we worked on this summer and worked into this fall and was introduced last week, was Bank of North Dakota taking a different view and looking at ag pace, or at least biodiesel pace, in a different way. When you go back and you look at when some of those first legislation bills were created for a lower interest program, it said traditional agriculture really couldn't participate, and rightfully so. You have a $9 billion industry and you can't access enough money to actually prop that up or subsidize that interest. But one thing that's changed in the last 10, 15, 20 years, animal agriculture used to be considered traditional on farms across North Dakota. It isn't anymore. So one of the efforts that they're making to help prop up and look at more value-added agriculture is, if you're looking at a livestock operation, a poultry, a swine operation, you're adding value to the commodities that are produced in North Dakota, you have the ability now, if this legislation passes, to now look at expanding or adding or doing something on your particular farm that may add more value to your bottom line, utilize those commodities, and prop up animal agriculture in North Dakota. So I look at something like that as doing a great deal of good harm or good value and benefit to our farms in North Dakota. And you're probably going to see east of the river all the way into eastern North Dakota benefiting the most from a program like this.
Just a small part of our panel discussion on the farm economy and crafting the next farm bill yesterday at the Winter Ag and Construction Expo at the Jamestown Civic. And, of course, that streamed online at newsdakota.com. Go to the video tab on the top menu. It's right in the middle of the page. Pull down, and there is the Ag Panel 114. So, you can watch that anytime. It's about 58 minutes long. Great discussion. Thank you very much for participating, North Dakota Ag Commissioner Doug Goring, North Dakota Farm Bureau President Daryl Leese, and farmer from the Jamestown area, North Dakota Senator Terry Wanzek.